It was just after 10:30 on Friday night in Moscow. The Soviet people were going to bed, unaware that when they woke the next morning, the world would have changed forever. Some 2,500 kilometres to the southeast, on the desert steppes of the Kazakh Republic, because of a time difference, it was already the next day, October the 5th, just before 12:30 in the morning. The huge R-7 intercontinental ballistic missile had sat stubbornly on its launch pad all day while the engineers and scientists tried to fix the many problems that had developed during the countdown. This was hardly surprising. The R-7 had only flown five times before, and three of those launches had failed, hardly a confidence-inspiring record. Finally, when the launch crew were about to give up for the night, it was decided to try one more time. From the blockhouse, only 100 metres away, protected by steel doors and thick reinforced concrete, a wise precaution as the second R-7 had exploded on the launch pad only 4 months previously, the countdown resumed. The launch controller viewed the brightly lit pad from a submarine-type periscope. As the count reached its final minutes, a lone bugler, who was never identified, walked onto the launch pad with a trumpet and blew a long series of blasts, a novel touch which would probably go down well with shuttle launches at Cape Canaveral. The seconds ticked down to zero. The R-7's 20 engine nozzles belched fire and smoke. Once the 600,000 kilograms of thrust overcame the weight of the rocket, it lifted off into the clear, cold Kazakh sky. But this R-7, unlike its five predecessors, was not on a ballistic missile test flight designed to splash down in the Pacific. This R-7 had under its nose not instruments to measure its re-entry, but PS, or preliminary satellite, a brightly polished metal sphere about the size of a beach ball and weighing 84 kilograms. It was indeed simplicity itself, with two transmitters operating on the shortwave bands, batteries to keep them going for a few weeks, and little else. PS was not going to make any startling scientific discoveries, but PS was bound for glory. As the R-7 disappeared from sight, the glow of its engines, only one of the millions of stars in the desert sky, the launch crew scrambled onto a bus for the short drive back to the assembly hangar. For them, no worldwide tracking network to announce separation and orbital insertion. They had to wait what must have been an agonising 95 minutes until the loudspeaker they had rigged up on a wall of the hangar changed from cosmic static to a steady, "Tim, this is your big moment." They carried their leader, Sergei Pavlovich Korolev, a 51-year-old engineer from the Ukraine, on their shoulders to a makeshift platform where he spoke to his team. "The conquering of space has begun. Today we have witnessed the realisation of a dream nurtured by some of the finest minds who ever lived. Our outstanding scientists, Tsiolkovsky, brilliantly foretold that mankind would not forever remain on the Earth. This satellite is the first confirmation of his prophecy. We can be proud this was begun in our country." And they had good reason to be proud. They had done it. Sputnik was in orbit, the space age had begun, and the world would never be the same again. Today we celebrate the 40th anniversary of Sputnik and the beginning of the space age. That was, of course, a long time ago. Many of us were not even born then, and the early history of space civilization is what we read in the history books. Most of us can remember where we were when the Space Shuttle Challenger and her crew were lost that early morning in January 1986. Many will recall where we were when Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin walked on the moon on a Saturday afternoon in July 1969. Fewer will remember the day Yuri Gagarin made his single orbit of the Earth in 1961, and fewer still that early Saturday morning in October 1957 when it all began. Even fewer in 1957 would have envisaged the huge impact space exploration has had on virtually every person in the world. It has led to the development of many technologies now taken for granted, from non-stick surfaces — will they ever let us forget those wretched Teflon fry pans that came out of the Apollo program — to geochemical analysis of prehistoric stream beds for gold exploration. It has led to an almost immeasurable improvement in weather forecasting and crop predictions. It has generated a global communications revolution. It has, right from the first exciting, grainy, black and white global television programs in the 1960s, been at the forefront of attempts to secure transnational understanding of ethnic, cultural and political diversity. It has repeatedly astounded us with its capacity to bring the application of science to a level that we could all readily understand.